Welcome to another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week, as our award-winning news team brings you the top news stories from this past week impacting Indiana agriculture and our farm community. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and coming up on today's show, Eric Pfeiffer reports from the Purdue University campus as students celebrate Ag Week at Purdue. You'll hear from Marnie Schwarzkopf, a Purdue Ag student from Bartholomew County, as she helps spread the word among other Purdue students, staff, and faculty about the importance of agriculture. Did you know also that Fort Wayne was once known as the heavy-duty truck capital of the world? And that's because of the old International Harvester plants that rolled out more than 1.5 million trucks there between 1923 and 1983. You'll hear from Ryan Duvall with Harvester Homecoming as he shares his passion for keeping the history alive between International Harvester and the city of Fort Wayne. Ryan Martin has your Michigan Farm Forecast. Brian Basting will review Friday's grain markets, both coming up in just a few. But first, our top news story this week is the formal announcement from President Trump on his official tariff plan.
With today's actions, we're also standing up for our great farmers and ranchers.
President Trump announced that he's imposing reciprocal tariffs starting at 10% on all imports coming into the U.S., with more than 90 different countries facing much higher tariff rates. And those countries include China with an additional 34% tariff, Vietnam with a 46% tariff, and Japan with a 24% tariff. Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist with StoneX, tells Hoosier Ag Today that the move by President Trump this past week will be a net positive over the long term.
Yeah, I think in the days ahead, we're going to see a lot of headlines driving the market, with some countries quickly coming to the table to negotiate down the tariffs, which will be seen as a positive, while others dig in their heels.
And even though there are concerns that China could cut off the U.S. altogether as a trading partner, Suderman says there's far too much at stake for China to dig in their heels.
I'm more encouraged now that we will see China coming to the table sooner, because the 54% tariffs on them, their economy simply, they cannot stimulate their way out of that. That was a huge blow to them, for 54% tariffs on the $450 billion worth of consumer goods that they want to sell to the United States. And so I think that'll force them to the table sooner than what we would otherwise see.
Also joining us here now on Hoosier Ag Today is Jackie Ponder from Johnson County, as she's the co-owner of Bowman Family Holdings and is heavily involved in Indiana's pork industry. She's also been recently elected as a new board member of the National Pork Producers Council. Jackie, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on President Trump's reciprocal tariffs, and what do you think they mean for the U.S. pork industry?
Well, with respect to trade, of course, this is something that the pork industry has been on pins and needles about, because trade is such a huge part of our economic forecasting. About $66 of every pig sold can be attributed to the fact that we have such a robust export market. With respect to the reciprocal trade agreement, I can say that we were pleasantly surprised that Canada and Mexico were not included in that. So anything that is covered by the USMCA is still zero tariff, and that includes pork. So that was welcome news, given that Mexico is our number one trade partner and Canada is close behind. So those were good things. I think we're in a wait and see mode. We're hoping that these reciprocal tariffs act as a catalyst to some of the countries that have trade barriers against us that pork has been butting our heads up against. And I know that Secretary Rollins has said that it is one of her priorities to open up markets for us. And to do that, the countries in question need to drop their monetary and non-monetary barriers to U.S. pork.
Jackie, as I mentioned earlier, China, Vietnam, Japan, and South Korea all facing among the highest reciprocal tariff rates from President Trump. And I know how much the Asian market means to the U.S. pork industry. How do you think these tariffs will ultimately impact trade with those countries?
Well, you know, China is always going to have tariffs, I think, just given all the other issues that America has with China. And U.S. pork has dealt with that over the last number of years. And still, they do import from the United States. I believe we'll still have trade with them. How it's going to affect it remains to be seen. Now, with respect to other nations in Asia, I think that we have more of an opportunity to work through some of the issues. For instance, Vietnam is one area that we really are interested in setting up some trade agreements with. It is a huge consumer of pork. I went with Indiana Corn and Soybean last year on a trade trip to Vietnam, and I saw firsthand the need for a trade agreement because the population there in Vietnam is getting more prosperous. And as they get more prosperous, they want better tasting and better quality and higher safety pork. And the U.S. is the top of that. And they right now have trade barriers against us, and we're still trading into there. So if they see the tariffs from America on other goods that they sell to us, they may be willing to talk to us about reducing the trade barriers. And that's, I think, one of the hope of this administration is these reciprocal tariffs are going to get people to quit messing around with United States goods and let them in.
Once again, Jackie Ponder from Johnson County, one of the newest board members of the National Pork Producers Council. As we pivot now from how President Trump's tariffs may impact the markets long term to how they've been impacting the markets here on Friday. It's time to check in now with Andy Eubank. Andy?
Thank you, CJ. A couple of very, very difficult risk-off days, Thursday and Friday, and it really didn't get any better on Friday other than a higher move in corn futures. We'll have those numbers coming up. Market analysis first from Brian Basting, Advanced Trading. I spoke with him in the middle of the session. Mostly risk off in the markets continued again on Friday, and it has been an ugly 2 days, Thursday and Friday, after the reciprocal tariff announcement from President Trump on Wednesday. Brian, the markets are really taking it on the chin. Corn is the one exception that continues to work fairly close to steady, which is fairly impressive.
Well, thanks for having me, Andy. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It has been a risk-off environment for equities, of course, too, and commodities. It spilled over with the imposition of the trade tariffs here pretty much worldwide. China has hit back now, if you will, with tariffs against the U.S. And as your listeners surely know, soybeans are the biggest destination. China is the biggest destination for U.S. soybeans. So soybeans are taking it the worst of the corn and beans by far at the moment. The market thinks back to what happened in 2018, 2019, that stretch in terms of what we lost or shipments of U.S. beans to China, and fearing a repeat of that. As you said, though, the bright spot, if you will, is corn at the moment. We continue to see really good export demand for corn, Andy. We've got a very limited export competition, probably for the next 4 to 5 months. A smaller crop in Ukraine last year, smaller crop in Brazil. They're pretty much out of the market until the new crop comes off in July and August this year. Argentina will be a shipper. Start to tune into too much of that noise, Andy. I'm concerned that as a grower, producer, marketer, you're going to get confused and you could be paralyzed by so much information coming at you at once. Stay focused on your marketing, and the rest of it will take care of itself one way or another.
Brian Basting, Market Analysis. Brian is at Advanced Trading. His number 309-664-2314. On the Hat Friday Farm Market Review, up in corn at the close, May 460 and a quarter, 2 3/4 up. July a penny and 3/4 higher, 467 and a quarter. Dees contract down 3/4, 446 and 3/4. May beans 977, a loss of 34.5 cents. July down 33.25, 993, and 7 cents lower. May wheat 529. The meats extremely weak. June live cattle $6.50 down 198.20, and down the $4 limit on June lean hogs 91.55. You're up to date on the markets on the weekend show. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Times are uncertain in agriculture today. There's no farm bill, Trade tariffs are looming, and the property tax debate is a mess. There is one thing you can depend on. Hoosier Ag Today is here to keep you informed with all the information you need that's vital and relevant to your farming operation. Even if it isn't good news, you'll hear it here first at Hoosier Ag Today. On air, online, and at the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
A wet weekend followed by a bitter cold air outbreak. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Weekend Weather Update. Here's what's going on across the Hoosier State. It's nothing that I like, probably not much that you like either. More moisture, that's the first thing. That's working through right now. Big surges of rain and thunderstorm activity worked their way up into the state late yesterday afternoon and last night. They will continue here through the day today. Potential for strong to severe thunderstorm activity holds. Now, I do think there is one more surge that comes overnight tonight into early tomorrow morning. In northern Indiana, we are probably done with precipitation before daybreak. Central and southern Indiana, it probably takes to mid-morning, maybe even late morning, till we're done. But we are done tomorrow. All in, all done. The moisture from last night through today, through early tomorrow morning, is likely to be anywhere from another half to 2.5 inches. Downstate, we could see some locally higher totals if the strong thunderstorm activity comes together. Now, as we move forward then, moving into the balance of Sunday, that's where cold air really wants to come in and take control. It's going to be quite cold as Canadian high pressure moves in. Sunday is a transition day. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is where we see the zenith of this cold air. Adding a little insult to injury, on Monday there's a system moving through Michigan and the Great Lakes that has the ability to trigger a little bit of light snow. I guess I won't rule out a little bit of that in north central to northeast Indiana. I don't think it happens much of anywhere else, but we will see good clouds for Monday due to that. Tuesday, Wednesday, we should see high pressure giving us partly sunny skies. Temperatures try and moderate the second half of the week. In that moderation on Thursday, hit and miss scattered rain showers will be trying to work through. Right now, I'm going to say half an inch or less, but coverage could be 80% of the state on the Thursday. And then for Friday, we're looking at a mix of clouds and sunshine. Temperatures not exceptionally warm, but not falling off very quick either. Over the weekend of the 12th and 13th, we stay mild, I guess we'd say near normal on temperatures, maybe a few spits and sprinkles later Sunday afternoon into Sunday night. And then the week of the 14th starts off with a frontal boundary coming through. Moisture, yeah, we probably see some of it later Monday into Tuesday. Coverage will end up being about 60% of the Hoosier State, but then we should settle in with a slightly drier outlook for the balance of that week. Maybe we can see evaporation really start to ramp up. Now, do I think it's enough to completely dry us out for field work, given the rains we've had recently? No, absolutely not. But I do think that we get into a slightly drier forecast pattern over the next couple of weeks. The cold air limits our drying here this next week, but that week of the 14th could open doors a little bit more. That's the way your forecast is stacking up. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin.
MicroEssentials S10 from the Mosaic Company delivers uniform nutrient distribution. Every single granule contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. MicroEssentials has superior nutrient distribution when compared to MAP or DAP blends. This means your crop does not have to search for those nutrients, improving nutrient uptake. Choose a superior phosphorus fertilizer with MicroEssentials. Contact your local ag retailer to learn more.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. And when you think about Purdue University, you often think about Coach Matt Painter and the Purdue men's basketball team, right? Well, you probably also think about Purdue being a huge school for agriculture because of their College of Agriculture. Even though there are so many students at Purdue studying agriculture, a lot of students there aren't. And you also have a lot of staff and other faculty who probably don't know the first thing about agriculture. And that's why back in 2012, Purdue launched Ag Week at Purdue to try to reach all the students, staff, and faculty across campus to educate them about the importance of agriculture. Eric Pfeiffer was there earlier this past week. He caught up with Marnie Schwarzkopf. She's a senior at Purdue. She's also originally from Hope, Indiana in Bartholomew County, and she serves as president of the Purdue Ag Week Task Force.
Let's talk about Purdue Ag Week. This is an annual tradition. I love it. I love coming to campus each year and seeing a lot of non-ag students being so interested in agriculture. And that's kind of what this whole thing's about, right?
Mm-hmm. This is absolutely what that's about. And so our goal is to kind of bring the College of Agriculture across State Street and bring it to a common place of students so that everyone can learn about the industry. And our goal is to educate, engage, and inspire the Purdue community and really just kind of advocate and through a celebration of agriculture and have some fun so that people can learn along the way and actually feel motivated to learn about the food system and be empowered to learn about what they're eating and how it gets to their plates.
You know, it's funny to me when I tell people what I do and that I live in West Lafayette, some people are like, oh, well, you live at the hub of agriculture in Indiana. But there are some people right here in West Lafayette that don't realize that is the hub of agriculture in Indiana. Do students around campus realize that the College of Agriculture is ranked where it's ranked and that this is the hub of agriculture?
Mm-hmm. I would say not all students do, and this is kind of why we do like to host that event. On Monday, we had a student playing some game shows and learning about ag, and some of them didn't even know what a donkey sounded like. And so I think that's why we're out here. That's why we're educating and kind of making this a diverse, inclusive atmosphere for everyone to learn and feel comfortable learning about the food system. I think Purdue is such a big engineering school and STEM school, and I think people often forget that we are over there. We're kind of in State Street, kind of across State Street by ourselves. And so our goal really is to show that we are a huge hub of agriculture and to kind of present the college as such with all of our amazing technology that we have, bringing in Indiana companies during Ag Expo, as well as bringing in different research from across the College of Agriculture to kind of showcase what all we do bring to the table in terms of the ag industry, which is really awesome to do.
And it's about jobs too. I mean, it doesn't matter what major you have here at Purdue, there are jobs in agriculture that aren't being filled that can be filled by really engineering and everything else across campus. It's about jobs too.
It is about jobs, and I think it's really cool talking to a lot of ag professionals that don't start within the ag industry. Like, I know a lot of us on the task force and stuff come from a family farm and we grew up with it, but it's really cool to hear those stories from ag professionals that didn't come originally from an ag background and tell their stories and be like, I got into this as just a first-time job and ended up loving it and loving the purpose behind it and being able to learn about it along the way and really just fully indulging in what all the ag industry has to offer. And that's something I want to get across to students as well is it doesn't matter your major, it doesn't matter where your starting point is, but if you aren't interested in the ag industry, you can certainly find a career and a job in it. And I personally think it's one of the most welcoming atmospheres to have a career in because everyone genuinely wants the betterment of the industry and the world as well. Farming is one of the most humble careers that you can have, and so I think it's really awesome that we have such an amazing industry of such supportive industry professionals.
And that's Marnie Schwartzkopf from Hope, Indiana, down in Bartholomew County. She's also a senior at Purdue studying agricultural communications. And if you go to Facebook right now and type in Ag Week at Purdue, you can find all the photos from all their fantastic festivities that they held this past week, so be sure to check that out. As we shift now from Ag Week at Purdue to the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture, concerns over tariffs, ag trade, and farm policy are all weighing on the minds of farmers, according to their Purdue Ag Economy Barometer Survey.
People are really focused on trade policy and the potential impact it's going to have on their farm.
And that's Dr. Jim Mintert with the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture. According to the latest Purdue Ag Economy Barometer Survey, farmers are a little less optimistic about the future of the ag economy than they were just a month ago. But he says farmers have mostly shifted their focus when it comes to their biggest concerns impacting the economy.
We had a period of time when people were pointing to interest rate policy as the top concern. Since the election, that's really changed. Now it's all about trade policy. The last 4 months, I think we've averaged about 43% choosing trade policy as the most important policy for their farm in the next 5 years.
Read more about the findings from the Purdue survey at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, speaking of farm policy, getting a new farm bill across the finish line is the top policy priority for NASDA, the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. Ted McKinney, who's CEO of NASDA and a native of Tipton County, Indiana, says another policy priority for NASDA is ag labor reform.
We need full-time employees in dairies, in swine operations, and even in poultry. We just can't get the labor that we need. So to help us move from a seasonal program only to a guest worker, nobody's saying make them citizens yet, but move that guest worker to a year-round is very much one of the priorities.
NASDA also wants to make sure that cuts in federal spending don't end up having a negative impact at the state level when it comes to state health inspections and food safety.
When cuts are coming on those areas or the people that perform in those areas, we're kind of interested. So we have to keep that going because it's our food safety at many, many levels that's in question.
Check out more from Ted McKinney at HoosierAgToday.com. And on the way next, you'll hear from Ryan Duvall with Harvester Homecoming as he shares his passion for keeping the history between International Harvester and the city of Fort Wayne alive. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
The farmers. Who's going to use that technology? Why is it important? Those are the things that, again, I think we can be that center and hopefully that home for across the country to say, where do you go to learn more about food farming and energy? You come to Connor Prairie, you come to Indiana, right? And we're in the center. So I'm going to say it out loud so that we can make my dreams come true. I want this to be the Smithsonian of the Midwest focused on food and agriculture. That's what we want to be. That's our goal. We're already a Smithsonian affiliate, so we have that connection with the Smithsonian institutions. They're a great institution of knowing how to marry that research aspect with public engagement. And we see that as being part of our future as well. And we have that legacy to keep hold of.
Get more episodes online at agrinovusindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and you may not have known that the city of Fort Wayne was once known as the heavy-duty truck capital of the world. The Summit City was also one of the leading manufacturing cities in the U.S. between 1923 and 1983, all because of International Harvester. Joining us now, Ryan Duvall with Harvester Homecoming, a nonprofit organization honoring the historic connection between International Harvester and the city of Fort Wayne. Ryan, let's go back to the very beginning before 1923, and how did the connection between International Harvester and the city of Fort Wayne begin?
So in the late teens, International Harvester was growing rapidly. Truck production was ramping up, and they needed a place for a new factory. So International Harvester went out and started lobbying and bidding for cities to try to win this new plant. Well, that's really the first time in U.S. history that we can find where a company did the outreach to find a city to build a plant. And, you know, there were 20 some odd candidates, and Fort Wayne won out, mostly because Chamber of Commerce came up with a team to work on this, and they found enough land. They agreed to build a neighborhood next to the plant so people would have a place to live that worked there, agreed to run a trolley line out there, run the water needs and all of that kind of things were huge. And Fort Wayne won and then started construction in 1920. And the first trucks were built in December of 1923, and there were 24 models that came out the next year. At its peak, it employed 10,600 or so folks, and there was, you know, over several different facilities. Not only did you have a heavy-duty truck plant, you had a scout plant, you had the company's main engineering center, where essentially a truck was built from paper to prototype, and you had a test track, you had parts distribution, you had... I mean, just there was a, you know, over 11 buildings, 12 buildings that were serving International Harvester. That's the other thing. It was the first industrial park ever built in America. You had trucking companies, North American Van Lines, for example. You had Fruhoff Trailer located just around the corner. There were so many companies linked to that truck works, even, you know, from tow trucks to machine shops to tire sellers to everything, that they probably was responsible for employing 30,000 plus every year that it was running.
Chatting with Ryan Duvall with Harvester Homecoming, and tell me how your passion for keeping this history alive started.
I turned 16 and my dad handed me the keys to a 1974 Scout. It was a truck I did not want because it was, you know, had a little rust, it had a little Bondo. It wasn't, a sexy sports car for sure. But that's what he gave me to drive. And it was probably the greatest thing he ever gave me because I fell in love with that truck shortly after he gave it to me and drove it until I couldn't drive it anymore. And so that's sort of where the roots were. In 1999, after I'd long sold the Scout, I moved to Fort Wayne, Indiana to work for the newspaper. And, I'd lived here about 2-3 weeks, called my dad one day and says, you know, because I always thought maybe someday I'd get a Scout again. It was always kind of the thought. Called my dad one day and I said, hey, man, Dad, there's a lot of Scouts up here. I've been surprised how many I've seen. I might be able to find one up here. And he says, hey, dummy, that's where they built them. I, as a kid, I didn't care where they built them. I didn't have any idea. But the ironic twist of that is that when I moved to Fort Wayne, even though the newspaper took you on a tour of the city and showed you everything, you know, to welcome you to town, nobody talked about that aspect of Fort Wayne because the plant quit building trucks in 1983. So I started looking into it. I said, you know, up in Auburn, Indiana, which is just north of here, they have museums for the Auburn Chords and Duesenbergs, and they have a huge festival every year. South Bend honors the Studebaker yearly. It's a big festival. Why aren't we doing something here, even though International's still an active company, and even though they pulled out of Fort Wayne, what happened here was important enough we should remember it, especially that Scout, which was an iconic vehicle. Next thing you know, someone suggests, why don't we do a cruising or something out at the old Scout plant? Wouldn't that be neat? Get all these people, because, you know, the advent of social media had made it easier to find out, hey, there's a lot of people that like old Scouts. So I said, well, let's see about doing this. And 2019, we with some help, you know, obviously working at the newspaper, I had some connections. And just from knowing people over the years, and I had a little meeting about talking about let's have a truck show. And that was the roots of Harvester Homecoming. And we formed a 501c3 nonprofit for the thing in April of 2019. And 6 months later, had a show and blew this out of the water, surprised everyone, was automatically the biggest truck show in the state, one of the biggest single brand and festivals in the country, and it was all history from there, so to speak.
Once again, Ryan Duvall with Harvester Homecoming. Their big truck show and festival this year set for August 1st and 2nd at the site of the historic International Harvester Truck Works facility there in Fort Wayne. They're also working with the city of New Haven to build a brand new museum to honor International Harvester. You can hear my full podcast interview with Ryan and learn much more about the history between International Harvester and Fort Wayne. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, that wraps up this week's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. Check out the podcast version. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.